This is Steve Sherlock, another Franklin Matters radio show. Number 672 in the series. This session shares part of the Franklin, Mass. Town Council meeting held on Wednesday, December 1, 2021. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. Members of the Town Council, Town Administration personnel, and some members of the public participated in the Council chambers in person, some via the Zoom conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. I split just about two-hour meeting into two logical segments. First covers the opening and the tax rate hearing, including approval of the several resolutions required to complete setting the tax rate for FY 2022, approximately 49 minutes. Second covers the annual snow presentation and discussion, council comments, and then the council votes to enter executive session, not to return to the open meeting, about an hour and 11 minutes. The show notes contain links to the meeting agenda and my notes. Let's listen to this segment of the Town Council meeting for December 1, 2021.
Now we will back up to presentations and discussions, our favorite annual discussions is snow removal. And Brutus Cantoregi, Director of Public Works, is before us this evening to tell us everything we ever wanted to know about snow, but we're afraid to ask. Snow removal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure it's a special night for you all too, doing taxes and snow at the same time. But once again, my name is Bruce Cantoregi, Director of Public Works. With me tonight is Carlos Ribello. He's the Highway and Ground Superintendent, and also Tony Brunetta. He's the Assistant Highway and Ground Superintendent. These two I call the snow bosses during the operations. So our snow removal priorities are always the roadways first, public buildings, schools second, and third, sidewalks. These priorities were established with the cooperation of school and police department long before I came here. So this is always kind of how it's been, how we've operated. Our goals down there is always to be prepared. We've already had our snow meeting with our folks down there, and you know, passed out our new snow routes and stuff like that. Respond with the appropriate resources in a timely manner. That can go both ways. We want to make sure we have enough equipment on the road, depending on the amount of snow we're going to get. And we don't want to overdo it either, because we try to watch what we do, not only for monetary, but also environmental concerns. Ensure that emergency vehicles can always respond during snow and ice events. During 2014, that was tricky at times. We actually had to go out, you know, we had 108 inches of snow in like 4 days. It was awful. But that's what we try to do. Provide safe passage of vehicles during snowfall. This is a little different than some of the older folks. You know, in the old days, you'd have to go get the bread and milk at the store, because they actually stayed home. Most residents nowadays with four-wheel drive vehicles, they want to be out moving around in a snowstorm. We ask, just throw it out there, that you don't, because it slows our operations down. But we try to make there still a safe passage. And then have all roadways cleared, i.e. Showing some asphalt, less than 1 inch of snow, and ice within 4 hours at the end of the storm. And the way we do that is with obviously plowing, and then we salt and treat the town. That's how we get to that. And that's what the council expects, and that's what the residents expect. That's what we try to strive to do. It does happen most of the time. When it doesn't, y'all call me up. So throw it out there. So FY 21, our approved budget is just over $1 million. It went up a little, and $375,000 of that, about a third of it, is just for salt. And just give a recap of 2020, we actually had 16 events. We had 58.5 inches of snow. That's slightly above average. We typically have around, they say in Boston, about 46 inches of snow. We spent pretty much right on budget, just over $1 million, and we spent $278,000 on salt. We used 5,200 tons of salt. One thing to throw out there for this year, we do a consortium bid to save money with a bunch of other communities for salt. Salt last year was around $45 a ton. We buy different types of salt.
$65.
It's $65 a ton now. So if nothing else, everything stays the same, just like it was last year, on a five-year rolling average, what I've done, it's gonna cost us $100,000 more this year just to do the snow, just to do salting for materials. So road salting, Mixing rate, we use a 100% salt. Started this a while ago. Some people ask why we don't use the sand like the old days. I think, as you know, when you use the sand, it can tend to pack up on the roadways. Additionally, what happens is the sand that we put down is that we collect it through street sweepings or catch basins, considered hazardous waste, and it basically costs $160 a ton to get rid of. So that's not even the labor to pull it up, because it carries all the pollution from the vehicles that fall off it. It gets stuck on the sand. So not to bring up the stormwater mandate, but that's kind of what that kind of falls up underneath there too. So that's why we go salt, okay? One thing that I started a long time ago here was trying to reduce the amount of salt, meeting expectations, is we used to go out and they treat the whole town every time there was an icing event. So we came up with, when Carlos got here, we kind of went through and we looked at the high priorities area of town. We call it the five truck row. It's basically six trucks because we got to do all the schools and everything else too. But we do all the main roads, we do all the hills and the problem areas. And if you look at, if we do the whole town, we basically send out 14 sanders, 21 employees, 400 yards of salt to treat the town. Costs around a little over $30,000. By doing the five truck route, we basically go down to $10,000. So we're saving money and we're using less salt out there. The one thing I always say, even when we do the five truck route, people call up and say there's a slippery spot here and there. We do try to respond to that. But I got to tell you, most of the roads that we don't treat during the five truck route are your typical subdivision roads and cul-de-sacs and all this other stuff. And I've said this before, if you're going down the road at 20 miles an hour, you're not going to slide off the road, okay? So, and the speed limit is typically 25, I guess, in the subdivision. So people just got to slow down a little, but they don't always. This is a slide put up a long time ago, environmental concerns. So salt, sodium, is what's called a secondary contaminant in our drinking water, which means it's not regulated. We don't have to treat it. It's not like lead or copper or something like that, but it's something we test for. And DEP recommends we have less than 20 parts per million. I think you can see how things have changed through the years. We're way over that. This is where we're at. This is our drinking water. I chose wells, we've been doing well three all along, and because that's away from 495, because they use a tremendous amount of salt. So I chose this well, but it shows where we're at right now. And actually in 2021, it went down a little because I think, the new plan, we actually pump three and six together, but it's pretty much, it's up there. So, the only way around this is we use less salt, which means we have to do more plowing and the roads wouldn't be as quick and ready and safe on time. So, but this is kind of where we're at, and I just want to put it out there for everybody. So plowing. The public works, we put around 35 pieces of DPW equipment on the road at one time. Every time we're out there, it's a little over $1,500 to plow the roads. We can't do the whole town with the equipment that we have. We're just way too big. We have over 200 miles of road. I think last time I checked, we had 247 cul-de-sacs, and if anybody's ever plowed, they take a while to get done. So we have about 80 hired pieces of equipment that goes up and down every year. We've had more, we've had a lot less, but it basically costs us around $10,000 an hour. We're out there. A typical storm is going to cost us, it's going to be a 10-hour storm, so it's around $100,000. Our typical, there's no such thing as a typical storm, but if you do an 8-hour storm, over a 24-hour period, contractors might be in for about 10 hours. Every storm costs us somewhere between $150 to $225, depending on the length of it. Contractor shortage, this is a labor shortage. It's not just for plows. I think everybody knows, we've been talking about this for years, everybody sees a sign. There's a good economy out there and it's COVID, it's affecting it. The other thing is there's just no drivers out there. They've really slowed down. It's funny, I was talking to a contractor today and trying to file him down and his loaders and stuff. And he's like, Bruce, I can't get drivers. He says, I said, well, if you got to pay more, it's like, we're paying more. He says, he works for a construction company, so they get prevailing wages. So the guys during the day are getting $68 an hour. He wants them to come and work at night, pay him $35 an hour. But they don't want to do it. They hate it. Every guy that comes in there says, I don't want to plow snow. No, blood money. No one wants to do it anymore. It's not like the old days. So drivers. insurance costs and requirements are gonna, I think I told you last year, especially for the smaller guys in town, like local guys that have a, you know, a business, one truck, all of a sudden it went from $1,000 a year to what, $5,000 a year. That's why we do a supplement, just have one truck. The big companies it doesn't affect is they carry all that insurance. But these small guys, and that just changed the last couple of years. CDL requirements. We've talked about this before. It's, you know, people smoking grass. They I don't know how else to say it. You know, it's 45 days. It's very hard to find CDL drivers. You know, the culture's changing on that because it's in your system for so long. So, and actually changing the CDL requirements in February, I think, you know, we've had a pretty successful program at Public Works. We bring guys in, we train them, we let our use our vehicles, and they get their licenses, you know, show a bit of loyalty and all of this stuff. Well, we can't do that anymore. I can't believe the feds are making it more difficult now, but you actually, before you can take a CDL driving test now, you have to go to a certified school and train, which we will not be. So you have to go to the Parker schools, that's $4,000, right? So it's even gonna make it harder. We can't even do the in-house training anymore. We've obviously lost equipment to private properties. You know, some people like doing that. Heather, and as Councilor Zolko said, people just want plows, blood money. It's the old saying. So the effect, obviously this could mean longer timetable to clear roads, more delays and cancellations of schools, potentially, longer time to clear sidewalks. That's like the bane of our existence now, that we always try to do the sidewalks, but that's the last thing to get done. Extended time to fix missed areas, cleared corners, etc. I think, you know, we're pretty proactive. We go down and do the downtown cleanup, you know, all the, right, this is my next one. But that could be delayed because the guy's going to rest because he's going to be out there, you know, working longer. And then it's the everyday thing, you know, delays in repairing potholes and other work, you know, because after a snowstorm, it tends to be holes in the road and everything else that comes up. We have to go back and fix all that, so there's going to be delays on that. You know, as I say, safety of residents, employees will always be our number one priority, but there's going to be some effects if this keeps going. So what we've done over the last couple of years, I think you guys know, we've raised our plowing rates, as you know other communities have. We've improved technology. I think we all our vehicles are GPS tracked. We've also working on getting some cameras out there. Just technology has changed a lot more, so we can start seeing different parts of town. Believe it or not, we've had times that Councilor Lorca one time, you know, it was sunny on your side of town. You're driving down, you know, Lincoln Street, it's all AC. So yeah, we're actually getting some cameras out there and look at stuff like that. We're looking at insurance companies. I've talked about that before. We've changed plow routes. I got to give Tony a lot of credit. He came in and looked at what was going on out there. We kept the same number of plow routes, but we mixed it up a little more. We actually have a public works employee on every plow route now, so we can be a little more responsive in case we lose a contractor. Someone will be there to just relying on. So he spent a lot of time, did a great job on that. Our internal communications, you know, how we deal inside and what's going on, and then our public outreach. I mean, this is obviously part of public outreach. You know, we're trying to let people know what's going on. Sidewalks. Like I always said, this is just a lose-lose situation. I mean, we'll never have the sidewalks done how everybody wants. But we have, just for the statistics, we have 35 miles of sidewalk, you know, identified for schools. These were taken, once again, these were, we haven't added any since I've been here. You know, we've touched up things, but these are the ones that, obviously, school walking routes at downtown areas, high traffic and speed zones. What affects is Mother Nature, obviously a timing storm, length of storm, type of storm, and amount of snow. The same guys that you see in the fancy snow removal sidewalk machines, the same guys that are out plowing before. So, you know, if they got to work all night, two nights sometimes, this gets delayed because of everybody else to put it in them. Time to clear sidewalks, less than 6 inches of snow, snow plows are used. That's obviously, you know, they're much faster that way. But when we do it that, we tear up everybody's lawn, and they all get cranky, so it's tough with that time. So, but that's job security for these two in the spring, so they go back and fix everything. If you have more than 6 inches of snow, snow blowers are used, that could be, you know, 2 to 3 days. Carlos tells me every time, he says, why do you say 2 to 3 days, boss? You know, so it's longer than that. But it just takes a while. this is always one of my things. It's taken a long time ago, you know, put a sidewalk in on Brook Street, we plow the sidewalk, and the student walks down the road. I can't help that. It just is what it is. But I will tell you, just something before I get off sidewalks, we have a really good program. We work very well with the superintendent, you know, started Maureen, and we started actually, at one time they used to have like an extra buses go out to pick up the kids that maybe were inside the 2 mile loop. And it's transitioned over the years now that, so if the directive comes out, any parent can put their kid out front and then bus drives by, they'll pick them up. It's like, whether you, because you don't have to pay or don't pay. So she just waives that, so any kid that needs a ride can get a ride when they're driving up to the school. So that seems to have worked out really well. And it's just a good cooperation understanding of what's going on. So here's the items that can affect the response. Some of these probably make sense, but doesn't. Obviously the timing of the storm, the day of the week, the hour of the day. You know, if it's on a weekend, that's a little easier. If it's at, you know, the storm starting at 5:30 in the afternoon when traffic trying to go down 140, you know, all our plow trucks are in the traffic because, you know, I always say Franklin's like a wagon wheel. Everything comes out of the center of town. You got all these spokes going on. We don't have these block systems that you can go around. We got to wait like everybody else. So that affects it, the timing of day. Duration of the storm, how long it's going to be. We have to protect our assets. You know, the last couple of years we had a tough time because we've had like 4 inches of snow that fell over like 12 hours and the guys are out there the whole time. And sometimes it's easy to have eight inches of snowfall in 4 hours because you get it done quicker, you know what's going to get done. Amount and type of precipitation, we could go through all this, you know, the heavy snow, the light snow. You know, rain falling, it's just interesting. The temperature during the storm is always a big difference between, you know, so it was my son the other day, it was snowing. And he's like, oh, Dad, you're going to have to go. And I go, nah, it's only 33 degrees. There's a big difference between 33 and 32. And it really is. And it's hard to get to that 32. But once it does, everything starts locking up. So, but it's also going to be a lot more difficult when you get down to storms that are down to 10 degrees because then, you know, it's tough on the vehicles, you know, the ice and everything else have to deal with that. And then obviously the salts don't work. We have to use the more expensive salt to clear the roads. Weather pattern, warm to cold, cold to warm. That's huge for us. We know it's gonna be, it's a cold storm, it's gonna warm up on the flip side, then that helps us. If we know when, like last year, remember how cold December was last year? And it snowed and it locked up the whole time. We were down our 20s. It was really tough to, you know, to fight the, we had some, we already had snow on the ground last
December
year.
17th.
Yeah, not that you remember right now. But remember how cold it was? And then it was warmed up, but it was just interesting. It was very hard to deal with that. Frost in the ground or outside the ground, I think you guys realize that. You know, if it's frost in the ground, the snow's gonna stick a lot quicker. Month of the storm, you know, now we have very little daylight savings time, the sun's low in the sky. When we know, you know, we get to, you know, late storms and, you know, February, first part of March, we know the next day it's gonna warm up. And it's just the radiant sun, you get that little black on the road, it's gonna do it. The other problem is it warms it up, it also freezes a lot quicker at night too, so we gotta be aware of that. The month of storm. And then obviously the recent storm activity, you know, we always go back to 2014, I mean, the guys are tired, there's nowhere to put snow, and that's just what happens. You know, when we get the storms, we have, last couple of years have not been that bad with huge quantities of time, but you know, when we have to push back, you know, the smaller trucks can only push back so far, so that's why when we start, we always go, you know, try to push to the curb and open it all the way up, so we can go back and put more snow back. Preparing for the storm, we watch the weather like everybody else. We also have weather services that we deal with. Equipment readiness, you know, always the priority. We're going through everything. Availability of DPW personnel, you know, whether staff's there, whether they're going to be out, whether we have people out, just who's going to. Obviously, contact with the departments. The superintendent, Ms. Sarah, and I talk quite a bit during the winter, like at 4:30 in the morning, the phone's always ringing. So we want to keep in touch and know what their expectations are. One of the things I don't know if you all know this, that it's very, in the whole scheme of the superintendent world, how she tells me, it's easy for her to like, delay school. You know, if it's going to be an hour or two delay, that's something a lot of people can grasp and they can deal with, they know what's going on. The worst thing you can possibly do is send the kids home early. Because you know, the folks probably might be working in Boston or somewhere else, and they got no one at home to watch the kids. So that's like her hardest decision. So we spent a lot of time talking about that. And we really try to avoid that, you know, so we work at that. Contract with our contractors, you know, for equipment personnel, they have all the same issues we do. You know, is their guys going to show up? Is their truck broken? What's going on? Availability of salt, that really has not been a problem the last couple of years. When I first got here, was. We had a small salt barn, but when we did the DPW, you know, 12 years ago, we built two subs. So we've been pretty good that way. And then training and after action reviews. We get ready for the next one. We look what we did right and what we did wrong. And it's never the same thing over and over again. So there's just a couple of things I put out there for, this is the public information. As you know, I'm the stormwater police, and I'm also the snow police and the water police. So it's actually by law that you cannot push snow into the public right away. I can tell you on a personal note, nothing gets my guys more frustrated when you see how pretty that road looks and it's all ready for salt, and someone could just push all the snow out there. And most of it's, that's when we're out and we're driving around. How many people do I just talk to?
All the time.
I know. I like talking to people at 2 o'clock in the morning. But if I'm going to be up. But it, most of it's public education, they don't know. You know, sometimes you get the contractors, the industrial parks that will do it. And I have issued tickets before for repeated people, but most of the homeowners just don't know. So it's more of a public, that's public education. Our winter storm parking ban, you know, it used to be much more strict, but anytime supposedly snow's out there, it's not based on date. It used to be like, you know, no, I think it was like November 15th to 8th, yeah, something like that, yeah. So we kind of went, this program works pretty good, and I will give kudos to the police department. They've been really good about this. They go out and they actually ticket cars. And you know what happens? Our first storm, it's like East and West Street, the downtown, School Street. There'll be all kinds of cars parked up because they don't know. The police will go out there, they'll give them warnings, typically, and it just kind of goes away. But
is
once again,
Councilor Jones's car.
It is. That was right at School Street.
If you notice, there's a little tab of orange just slightly ticking out.
Yeah, no, there is. They've been really good the last couple of years. They know. Don't I always call it dispatch?
Yeah.
Right at 1 o'clock. I got a whole laundry list of streets.
But they do try to call the resident to let them know to move first before they do a ticket.
This is an old school thing. You know, they used to give out free salt down the garage. You know, obviously safety employees and residents. We don't need people showing up to the DPW garage at 3 o'clock for salt. You get run over by a truck. And obviously DEP regulations, everybody's like, oh, they used to put a pile up front, you know, well, that whole water, stormwater thing. So liability issues. Fire hydrants. We do not clear fire hydrants, and the fire department doesn't either. So we ask residents to clear the fire hydrants. If you can't, we've had people who can't find the fire hydrant. So, but we've been really good about putting the markers out. So if you see a fire hydrant in your neighborhood that needs a marker, let us know, and we'll go put a marker out on it. We've pretty much been out already this year. Mailbox policy. Yes, we will be opening up the lottery, and who gets the most mailboxes? Sorry, I'm only kidding. I was just talking to the guys, and you know, it's one of the worst things we want to do is knock over some mailboxes. And you know, we really do a good job clearing snow in this town. And the last thing we want to do is just really upset somebody by knocking over the mailbox. We really, really try not to. It does happen though for various, various reasons. So the mailbox policy is currently that you can get a reimbursement up to, I think it's $45. It's $45. Now, we did raise it last year. And basically, that's a basic mailbox that you can go get at home. You mailbox and post, you get for $45. Of course, we get the people that come in all the time that it's their $2,000 Walpole woodworkers, granite posts, and they want to be reimbursed for it. And we don't do that. The whole thing is actually we allow that most mailboxes are on public right away. So you've allowed them to put them through there. Okay, so it's actually our property, so we're actually allowing them to do it, because the Postal Service says so. But you don't really have to, and that's why we're not liable to do it. So we do give a mailbox policy, but we can't. It's not fair to say, you know, we're going to pay for an 1,800 mailbox or something to 35 or something. And most of the ones that get knocked over, I'll say most of them. They were installed not the way they should be. Mm-hmm. They're hanging over the curb line, and it happens. And I will say, just through practice, people think that granite is like very, very sturdy. It's not. It gets very cold. It doesn't take much to knock over granite blocks. You're better off with a wood. That's just the truth. Basketball hoops, they're obviously not allowed in the public right away. This was a great one. This is long gone. It's like 10-year-old picture, but yeah, you can't do that. Obviously, that hinders the trucks when they're all trying to do their work. So these are my top 10 complaints. Plows keep putting snow in my driveway right after I shovel. We actually time them. Once they finish, they go inside, get some hot chocolate, we fill it back in for them because we want to keep them out there working. So we don't try to do that, but that's just kind of what happens, and it's not our intention. But my street's not down to asphalt, but others are. Well, in all retrospect, it's the way I kind of look at things. If you're in a subdivision, you know, there might be a little more snow there, and then you work your way out to, you know, like one of the major roads, you know, you get to a Lincoln Street and you get to Pond Street. It gets better as you go, and that's kind of like how the speed goes up. So that's typically what happens. You know, some it could be different reasons, the sun, everything else, but that's what we try to do, do the best we can. There's more snow on my side of the road than the other. I tell you what, I got a guy call one night, and he literally went out and measured. He had a yardstick saying, he had more snow on his side. And I really explained to him that wasn't fair. He should not be getting more snow because his neighbor wanted that snow. So I won't. I really felt bad for his neighbor. So we had a long conversation about that. But we really try to go down. We try to divide the snow evenly, you know, honestly. The snow banks are too high. I can't see oncoming traffic. This is a real concern, and it does happen. And we typically go out the day after the storm. We send the loaders out and knock stuff down. I hit my mailbox. I cannot get to my mailbox. Typically, I can't get to my mailbox. It's the ones in the cul-de-sacs. We try not to. You know, it does happen when they get pushed up in there. And you know, I have sent. You know, sometimes people just complain it's like 2 feet. And sometimes I've been out there. It is like 20 feet of snow. I mean, it's really bad. I'm like, ooh, I'm sorry. So we send it out and clean it. But that's, you can't get to it with working that. I can't dig out and find the hydrant. I kind of talked about that before. You push snow up on my property. Most, and I'll say subdivisions, everything's a little different, but pretty much off the curb, the first 10 feet to 12 feet subdivision rules and regulations is actually town property. So we're not actually pushing on town property, we're actually pushing our own property. The flip side of that is a lot of people, they put their irrigation systems out to the curb line and that might get damaged, or they put a fence, you know, up to the curb line and it ends up being on town property. So we'll talk to GIS if the fence got knocked over or something like that. We look at it. If it was put on the town property or irrigation, we didn't give you permission, we don't pay for it. That's just the way it is. So we go through to the GIS. So I guess public education, once again, if you're putting a fence up, make sure you're putting it on your property, not the town property. You think of us as your neighbor. You wouldn't put your fence on your neighbor's property. Plow trucks are doing like 40 miles an hour. If anybody's ever plowed before, it's very difficult to do 40 miles an hour on a plow truck. I gotta tell you, they are big, they're loud, the snow comes off the front, everything else. But if you are sitting on Pond Street, for example, and you're shoveling the end of the drive and that truck's coming down the road, it probably looks like it's going 40 miles an hour because it's big, it's loud, it's pushing snow everywhere. I have taken councils out to drive in a plow truck. And if you want to see, I'd be more than happy to take you out in a storm. I'll pick you up and drive you around. And one of the big trucks, too. So, but typically we don't do that. And we have had complaints in the past, and we run the GPS on the trucks. And I think once here, I had one guy that was speeding. He wasn't plowing time. He was just speeding through town. So we do handle that. We take it very seriously. So if the resident's home really, really thinks so, give us a call, and we can check the truck. And then when's it going to stop snowing? I don't know. But people call up. Do you know what's going to stop snowing? I'm like, no. Soon, I hope.
July.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, right.
So, let me finish up, think summer. All right. So, a couple months away. Hopefully, I answered most of the questions. I'll try to put it all through there.
Nice job, Brutus. Thank you. As always, Kyle. Questions? Councilor Frangillo.
Thank you. That was very thorough. It seems strange to me that we would do all roads before all sidewalks. And, you know, if we're trying to prioritize people getting to work and getting to school, and their main mode of transportation is walking or otherwise using sidewalks, then why would we not equally be prioritizing clearing sidewalks, you know, from the most important to least important at a similar length of time? I would say it seems to be a particular concern in that those that are most likely to be walking to their basic needs are most likely our lowest income residents. I don't know, how did we end up in the system that we have, and how do we go about considering change of that priority? Or is there something I'm missing?
I would say the knee-jerk reaction to that is I think it is just me, the priority is to keep the roads clear, and that's for emergency vehicles, because we have to respond to a fire or an ambulance. So that's why we usually typically do the roads. And then operationally wise, when we're clearing the roads, you know, like through a storm, the snow goes onto the sidewalks. It's almost impossible to clear the two at the same time. Because if I'm clearing one, the truck's in and another 3 inches of snowfall is going to keep going back on top of that. Mm-hmm. There are communities that do it at the same time, but would be another expense. It's in the personnel issue, just because you have to have, you know, more equipment to get it done. So that's why that's just how it's been established here. I mean, we can do anything. It's just a matter of funding and getting there. I understand what you're saying. And that's why, and I will say it goes back to, we do see after, it's tough, we see after, you know, a long storm, I see people walking down, you know, 140 Central Street. They're walking out in the road. And it's like, these guys don't be like, I get them out all the time. We gotta get out there. And you can just see it. And you don't see a lot of kids, I gotta be honest with you. It is people that walk.
Yeah.
But it's just doing the resources of, you know, my folks to get out there is just hard to do.
Well, I guess then I would just ask that we continue to keep an eye on it, and you know, if there's demand or opportunity, like it might be something to reprioritize or put pressure to reprioritize.
I will sell you, though, that at one time it was brought up that a lot of communities, the businesses particularly,
right,
did do the sidewalks in front of the property.
Mm-hmm.
And that was brought up, and it didn't go through.
Yeah.
But that was brought up at one time, because that would help. Because we did a whole thing about basically, I think it was, what, almost 30%? But I think about 30% of the sidewalks we do were, you know, commercial or industrial properties. And if they had that responsibility, then that gives me 30% less to do, and I can do the remainder quicker. But, you know, that's a policy what the town wants to do. So, and, you know, and I can give you reasons why it's a good way to do it. That, you know, do you want to put that burden on the industry? Some people say yes, some people say no. But that's not me. But I'm just telling you that's one other option I see.
Yeah. And the only other thought I had was, you know, as our salt is way above what's desirable, and as we, you know, continue to push onto sidewalks, I wonder what the impact of virtual work and learning will have on demand to get out as quickly. The emergency vehicles, I think that's a helpful reframing, right? Like that's going to come first no matter what. But it would be interesting if there is ability to not be quite as on top of it, because there's just, you know, more work from home, right? You don't need to get as deep into subdivisions, possibly. I don't know.
I got to tell you that, so two things with this, the remote in the school, we talked a lot last year about, oh, this is great, that they're going to be remote teaching from school, it's going to get rid of snow days, which it kind of did last year. But talking to Superintendent Turn, that's not allowed anymore. So you know, the virtual snow days are gone because they just don't, they can't get it to everybody all at the same time. I can tell you, and I just, I was with a meeting last week with the DOT and some of those folks, and the traffic locally is worse now than it was pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, the numbers are starting to go back up, and I'm sure you see it in the Boston, but it's almost, it's worse now in Franklin. So they're actually having to relook their model because it's not about getting from Franklin to Boston, it's about moving between Franklin and around here. And this is what every other community is dealing with. So, which I think is good, it's going to be more difficult for us because now people are at home and they want to move around town more.
Yeah.
So that's, it's an evolving thing.
Yeah.
It really, I think you're right, but there's still going to be the people. I think it's so funny they get their bread and milk. I think when I grew up, I mean, people really stayed out the road for 2 days.
Yeah.
You really needed bread and milk. You know, now it's just like, I got to get to the store. But you can drive to the store just pretty much any time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Frangillo. Councilor Hamlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, thank you, Brutus, and Carlos and Tony for being here tonight. I have a question about the salt. So I know we have these two big salt barns over at the DPW headquarters, which I suggest my the new counselors here take a trip over there and see all the cool things you guys do. When you buy the salt in the course consortium that you're in, do you have to take delivery of everything at once? Does it sit somewhere else? Like, when do you get deliveries of it? Do you have to order everything you want at once?
So the good news is, and we started this a long time ago, when I first got here, the salt barns were empty, or salt barn was. Mm-hmm. So I fill it up at the end of the year. So all that salt, you at least look at it last year, was $45. So our first.
Is there a lot left over?
Yeah, they're full. No, that's the last thing we do is we make sure it's full in the springtime. So that way it goes on last year's budget, so it reflects everything. So, and that's something we did 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So as we need, we have two types of salt. We have just a regular type salt, and we have magnesium one that works down to, but that's about $85 a ton. But that works down to about 8 to 10 degrees. Yeah, which is it's pretty cold. I mean, 8 to 10 is standing temperature, pretty cold for around here. So, but that will burn off the ice. So we don't use that unless we have to.
Mm-hmm.
But then we just call and order it. You know, it's they just come in with a big 18 wheels.
Okay, so you don't have to say the beginning of the budget year. You don't have to say we were gonna order 360,000 tons or whatever you
We estimate 5,600. So that's what we give to the consortium.
Okay.
And then every other town might do that. So they put that whole number together. We're under no obligation to buy that salt.
Okay.
If we didn't have one storm this year, we don't have to buy anything.
Okay. That answers my
It's different than gasoline and diesel. You know.
Okay. And so then you use that stuff up and then fill up the barn with the new stuff probably this year, and then it's ready. That's really cool. I have another question about, so I know you guys do all these really cool things, you go through and you take the big snow banks down in the downtown areas and different places. Where does the snow go when you take it away?
Mended. We send them everything in Mended. No, we have a snow farm. We call it.
Yeah.
It's up off of Washington Street.
Okay. Yeah.
We've used different areas in town before. We used to use the old sewer belts.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilor Hamlin. Councilor DeLorco.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I love this. Beautiful. I already had one meeting this week already on it. Yeah, I just want to. I don't think there's that many people going to be walking that much anymore because a lot of people will be working from home during the snow. I think. Now I know my wife will not go. She's so happy that she doesn't have to go to work in the snow, so she'll be working from home. So, just to let everybody know, and you guys can verify it, that the equipment is ready, but when you plow snow, it takes a beating. Mm-hmm. So. one of those sidewalk plows could throw a track, and then that's going to throw everything behind. Your sanders get stuck. Parts are hard to get. I mean, I got a Henderson sander that I've been waiting for a bearing for 4 weeks. I almost called you, Brutus, to see if you had one. So, I mean, to be honest with you. But I just got a whole stock in yesterday. So that's the other thing that the people, the plows break, the pistons break, you hit an ice, you blow a piston. So that happens a lot. And then people, you know, then you're behind the eight ball. So you're behind the eight ball right off the bat. And you guys do a great job, and I understand where it is. Just letting you know, Brutus, I don't know if you'll need it. If you need something, you can't find a pot or anything, because pots are so hard to get. Mm-hmm. It is incredible.
You know, I didn't even I forgot about that. I wasn't even thinking of something. Dude, we got trucks down there that just, we've been sitting. What was it, sweeper?
Sweeper pots.
Forget. We have trucks on order from Last Capital that we're still waiting on.
That
we won't be able to have for this winter.
No. The ones that I'm fixing now, if you looked underneath, they shouldn't even be on the road. I'll be honest.
Well, we didn't know we'd take this. Some of the ones that from the Last Capital, they were stripped and auctioned off. They just went out 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I just got rid of mine.
Yeah, as Carlos says, with short trucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, if you need it, if I have one, you're more than we can. Figure something, figure it out or whatever.
You can come and drive. I definitely need drivers.
Oh, I know. I'm in Boston. Let me retire first. Hey, look at it. And that's awful that they will not let you train your own drivers.
Isn't it? It's
awful. I'm putting my son through the Teamsters. He's getting his CDL. Mm-hmm. But they have a school.
I really think, it's not a bad idea, I'm going to say that, but I think they're going to push it off just because of everything's going on. We all see about trucking and getting supplies out there and everything else. I think, because if people at home don't know it, the CDL is a federal license. It's not a state license. So that's why the whole, the regulations regarding marijuana, because marijuana is still illegal at the federal level. Mm-hmm. So that's why it doesn't transcribe down to us. So, but they're the ones that actually issue the CDL licenses, and that's their training requirement. I honestly, we've been lobbying, Mass Highway, and actually every other organization in the country.
Teams is that too, but
yeah, they're pushing that back.
Yeah, trying to push it back because, I mean, he may never use it, but I said, get it, because you can, it's incredible the amount of money you can make just driving.
Mm-hmm. I told my kid to say,
it's incredible.
Summer, if you work the summer, you're the CDL.
Yeah.
For college, it's amazing.
But anyway, good luck. Let's hope we get through it, and that's about it. But you're more than welcome to call me, Brutus, if you need.
Thank you.
If I have it, I'll be glad to bring it home. And I might have to call you sometimes.
We'll reimburse you because the Karen officer is watching right now.
Thank you, Councilor DeLocco. Councilor Chandler.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Brutus. Carlos, I don't think you get enough credit. Good job. I
appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
And Tony, it's good to see a Franklin kid start moving up. Very good. Thank you. Appreciate all your hard work. Big fan of your five-truck route. Thank you for that. And Councilor Frangilla already talked to. I figured the parents, we could get some information out of you if they were going to have remote school days, but you kind of ruined that one.
Not me.
I'm all for it.
And I want to give a shout out to the council before me, because you guys actually, it used to be a winter parking ban where you could never park anytime throughout the winter.
Correct.
And that was hard on the residents. Mm-hmm. That was just too hard.
Right.
And you guys moved it just for the snowstorms. So I'm glad to hear that you're not having too much trouble with that, because it was a lot easier on the residents. It really was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was tough on us too. And I got to say, it's sincerely, it's just a good cooperation between us and the police department. And the chief gets the guys out there, and the sergeants at night, they're really good about getting out there. And at first I was going to be a little skeptical, like they don't want to be out there in the snow, but they were. Me and Carlos would drive by, right? Like we go down oh, Union's always bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you'd see all, like, the little thing, you'd see the hand and this little piece of orange sticking in there. Like,
hey. Guys will call in the license plate to the police officers.
Yeah, try.
And they'll try, you know.
So like you said, at 2 in the morning, it's hard to get people out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But once your first or second storm, it doesn't happen anymore. It's just that first one.
And let's see, lastly, it's funny, I still remember like a lot of the old guys coming down to the DPW with their own buckets to get that salt. And they were pretty mad for a while. They were, their rule changed, let me tell you. I used to get an earful. I was getting gas down there.
And you? And,
I know, I'm sure you got an earful. With the cruiser. With the crew getting gas. Yeah, not in my own.
Good point,
Sean. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilor Chandler. Councilor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, Brutus, it might actually help if not only were you two at people hoping the snowstorm's going to end, it may help if you actually send a message out to everyone telling them when it's going to start so that we can actually move our vehicles, too, and not get ticketed. There you go. We're going to make you the weather forecaster, the weather remover, the snow remover.
I've had to get to do my announcements.
Trash day, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't done a trash day in the last year.
I did post that there was going to be a show tonight for snow removal, that everyone needs to tune in and hear your voice, because everyone misses it. Like, we don't get much
thank you.
Voice on the radio or on the answer machine anymore. Mailboxes, I know that always becomes a hot topic. And obviously with fewer storms, we end up with fewer mailboxes destroyed. But you're not joking about the granite ones. I've seen one, I don't know if you've seen it or not, over in Rentham, coming around the corner by King Phillips. A gentleman has that one, a gentleman lady. But they have a mailbox that quite literally looks like a steel safe. It's a 4 foot high, looks like it's 2 foot by 2 foot official stainless steel mailbox. I just can't understand how anybody can even want to bother to spend more than $40 on a mailbox in the first place. The fact that we are generous enough to give money back for people who get their mailboxes destroyed, even though they do actually tend, as you pointed out before, tend to put them in the public way, mostly on Pond Street, because my mother lives on Pond Street, most of those mailboxes, all the way up Pond Street, I know many people probably already noticed this already, there are some really clever in ingenious ways that people put their post boxes out by the curb. Most of them put them inside a concrete 5 gallon bucket of concrete, and they just move it out of the way so that they can put it back where it was after the snowplows go by, which is nice because it almost acts like a weeble. Remember the weebles?
Yep.
Back in the day, they get nailed and back over, they pop back up again. Brilliant. Some of the ideas that people come up with. Some people actually use extension poles where they have an articulating arm extended out into the street. Just all these clever things that people come up with. The fact that he gets their mailboxes hit is extraordinary to me. But, that's good. I was waiting for the kicker.
Yeah.
Somebody have a timer on?
No. What I wanted to say is that I wanted to say for all the years that you guys have been doing this and taking it, some years have been worse, some years have been obviously a lot less. Everyone who puts their heart out there and on their sleeves and helps out to the snow removal. I don't really truly think everyone appreciates all the hard work that goes into just even one snowstorm. And clearing these roads, and clearing these streets, and clearing these sidewalks, and trying to keep the town functional in such an expedited way. I just wanted to say everyone does such a great job. I truly appreciate all the hard work that goes into everything.
Thank you.
I heard Mr. Mercer is going to be joining on the snow plowing efforts this year.
Send me the memo. Any other counselors? Brutus, Jamie, anything to add?
Just really quickly, Mr. Chairman, I just want to, I mean this sincerely, I want to thank Brutus and Carlos and Tony and all of the staff down there. You know, I've taken those rides. I encourage anybody to do that. The difficulty in getting drivers is real. The difficulty this year in getting parts is real. It may be a year to go back to the bread and milk. And in all seriousness, if there are big storms coming, people should consider you know, stocking up a little bit. It might be a slow year at times just because of the supply chain issues. We hear too much about it, but they are real, and I think Councilor DeLorco and others have spoken to some of that. So we always appreciate the citizens' patience. We always appreciate their complaints. And the staff down there really do work so hard for days on end, and I just can't thank them enough and thank the council for your support each year. And the budget that we do have, both through capital and the operating, you know, our team works really hard. They're always creative, and you know, hopefully this will be another successful year. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie, Brutus, Carlos, Tony. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for all you do and all your staff does. A great job. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, moving on. Subcommittee report. Town administrator's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got one item. I just want folks to know it was a year ago this month the National Grid came in here, mm-hmm. And they made a series of commitments. And just this past week, we did get the poll petition from National Grid to install a new pole on Grove Street, which I approved, which is the last piece of the commitments that they had made a year ago. They've fulfilled all of them. And this one is really important because this is the pole that is going to have the technology on top that is going to be able to detect better the power outages and send those to National Grid at a much faster rate along that entire corridor that we had discussed last year. So normally the poll petitions, for folks that don't know, just kind of come into the office, and 99 out of 100 times they're fairly routine. They're improvements, the engineers have already looked at them, and by the time they get to me, they're semi a rubber stamp. And so this year, when we got to the hearing, it dawned on me this was not just your normal average pole that you put in for electricity. This was actually the infrastructure that they're going to begin to put in, you know, as soon as they can. They're even trying to do this, obviously, before the ground freezes. But I did want to make note of that. It was a year ago Ann Malley and National Grid were here. They made a series of requests. And I just wanted to follow up with all of you on the council, as well as the folks at home that are listening, that remember that debate, that the final phase of those improvements that they committed to just got approved by my office, and that hopefully those will be getting done over the next couple months. And I do want to give a quick shout out to National Grid on that. They're never the popular entity for obvious reasons, but I have, and the fire chief, we've been looking at the amount of outages, and I hope all of you have seen an improvement over the last year. We've had a few humdinger storms come through with some very high winds, 40, 45, 50, 60 miles an hour. And while there have been some power outages here, they're gonna happen. I think if you look at the numbers, the amount of citizens that have had power outages has dramatically decreased since last year. So that's just my quick town administrator's report with that good news. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Jamie. Okay, moving on. Future agenda items. Councilor Sheridan.
Not at this time.
Councilor Frangillo.
Nothing additional at this time.
Councilor Hamblin.
Nothing at this time.
Councilor Cormier-Ledger.
Nothing at this time.
Councilor Chandler.
Nothing at this time.
Councilor Pellegrini. Councilor Jones.
No, sir.
Councilor DeLorco. Okay, council comments. Councilor Cormier-Ledger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I haven't spoken all night. This is, I'm trying to spare everybody from having to listen to a million questions from me. But I first wanted to give our town administrator a little shout out. Jamie, thank you for helping me, and for everybody out there that doesn't know, you could be saving money right now on your electricity. He's talked about this before. Check your electricity bill. If you have not opted in, or for some reason it didn't opt in automatically, check that on your bill. I saved 6 cents a kilowatt, which on a 1,000 kilowatt bill, that's $60 a month. Yep. So that is real money, and I would encourage everybody to take a few minutes and check your bill. And if you have any questions, please contact the town, and Jamie and his team will get you the form you need, and it was pretty easy. I also want to thank the youth hockey team and DPW for the beautiful decorations on our town common. They They look lovely. And I want to thank the nearby Chabad for the beautiful ceremony of Hanukkah that they invited us to this past Monday. The lighting on the common and the festivities that accompanied it were great, and several counselors here were able to attend that. And happy Hanukkah to all friends and residents in town that are celebrating. And finally, there is a directory out there, www.franklinareanonprofitnetwork.org. I would encourage everyone, especially because this is December, the holidays, we're getting into cold months. People ask about how they can help their neighbors, how they can give. There's a great directory on that website that lists all local nonprofits. Steve Sherlock and other volunteers have taken the time to put that together. I would encourage everybody to check that website out if you're looking for opportunities to give, charities perhaps to support, or ways that you can get involved to help your neighbors. Other than that, thank you very much.
Thank you. Councilor Chandler.
Through you, Mr. Chairman. I want to start off with something that I'm sure Councilor Pellegrini and you will mention, the passing of Phil Gelinow. Just a great guy. I just feel for his family. His wife, his son, Chris, were really, really nice to my wife over the years. And I really appreciate him and his family. And it was very sad that he passed away. And, Jamie, I've been driving by the Red Brick School again. It just keeps looking worse. What's the, some kind of time frame? Or?
Through you, Mr. Chairman. So regarding the Red Brick Schoolhouse, we have hired, we've had a designer to do what we need to do to remove the difficult news. I think that everybody knows is that the Red Brick Schoolhouse is all lead paint. And so once we get into this discussion, you know, it's pretty much, it is what it is. And I think if we're gonna restore the Red Brick Schoolhouse to its full glory, I think a lot of folks do agree that you have to be able to do the woodwork, the repairs. You got to get rid of the lead paint. Otherwise, you're just putting more paint over lead paint, and you're just making the problem worse in the long run. The good news is we do have a designer that we have hired to do the work on removing the lead paint. I can assure you that we are getting cost estimates to make a pitch to CPA to use the Red Brick Schoolhouse as well as the cupola at the museum. We did a couple tours a few months ago to make sure that that is a, I would believe, and I know that Mike D'Angelo believes the same and many others do, that that should really be a high priority for CPA historical preservation fund use. The timeline on that overall project is going to take some time. It is not quick to do. It's a fairly sophisticated process and a preservation technique to get rid of the lead off of the actual walls of the building. And we're obviously trying to do this in the most sensitive fashion possible because of the wood. I couldn't agree with you more, Councilor Chandler. I really couldn't. I've admitted this and said this publicly many times. I think for a building that people in town and I hear of, and you know, I've been here 6 years, you know, that want to restore it to its original glory, you know, I think unfortunately to restore it to its original glory is just going to take a long time and a lot of specific techniques to make sure that that building is preserved. The time frame on it is something that is very disappointing to a lot of folks, and I can understand that. But if it's just in our hearts, if we believe it's the jewel of the town and one of the most important buildings, it's hard for me to say we should just throw up another coat of paint and put on a couple pieces of wood and paint it and move on. I don't know if that's doing justice. That being said, you know, I think we're open to all feedback and comments from everybody about how they want to approach restoration of that building. And we're certainly, you know, there'll be public hearings in January at CPA, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of other opportunities at Capitol or others to discuss that. So if folks have any thoughts, I'm happy to take them. Thank you.
Thank you. That was very helpful. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilor Chandler. Councilor Blakery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up on that, it has been quite a while since we had our meeting at the Brooks School, and I would have thought that some things would have been going on a little bit faster than that. I'm happy about that. How about grants? I know you talked about CPA, but what about filing for some grants to take care of that historic building?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, we did apply for a cultural facilities fund grant and we did not get it. Rebecca applied for it. At the end of the day, whether the funding source is CPA, whether it's town free cash, whether it's in the operating budget, or whether it was through grants, you just heard from Brutus and Council DeLorco and others, the ability to get a contractor on site is almost impossible. The truth is, and I think people just have a hard time, we want the Google search. really, I think people want the Google search. And getting a contractor on board, specifically with that kind of specialty, getting a contractor for almost anything these days is extremely difficult. On time, predicted, it's just, the construction industry is just really backed up. And so I wish we could have had somebody on site a lot earlier. But it's just not able to happen. It just takes a lot of work to get somebody on site, particularly to go outside in the middle of cold weather to scrape off lead off the side of the brick. That's not an easy task and requires a different time frame to do that.
I understand what you're saying now, but when we came out there, that's when we should have had someone during the summer to do that, to scrape off the paint on the bricks, because that's what we talked about. I'm just wondering if there aren't people in town here that would be capable of doing something like that.
Yeah.
Jamie, go ahead.
Through Mr. Chairman, again, we had to dip into, I believe it was our second or third choice of getting a consultant just to find a team to come get the lead. I just can't emphasize it enough. It's just not that easy to get somebody to show up. And even if you get them on contract, they still aren't going to necessarily show up. Most of the contractors I know are so overbooked with projects, they can't possibly get them in. And I see other folks in the industry, and I appreciate the heads nodding. We could not get somebody there physically that night. We hired the folks to do the design of the lead removal and the roof, the rotted wood. We hired the company eventually that Barton Associates, who did the library, a portion of the library restoration, and they'll tell you they just have more work than they have people to do it. There's not a company.
With these people?
Yeah.
We did.
Yep.
Was there any clause in there to say that if it wasn't done by a particular time?
Okay. You could, but
no,
then
no, was there?
Yeah. Oh, all of our contracts have those provisions. Those are all in stand. We can sever a contract within 30 days with anybody at any time under any reason that we want out of convenience. So absolutely, those provisions are in there. The issue is that if you don't have them, we got to go back out in the market and find another company. And it took us 3 months at least to get somebody on site to get a contract before. We're hoping that we can get them into the time frame in the winter to hopefully be ready for spring. But it's just a very, very challenging work environment to get it in. I think we all want it. And in terms of volunteers, I'd have to talk to Mike about that. I'm not so sure that's the best idea or people in town.
I don't mean volunteers. Oh. I mean people in business in town that would have more of an interest in our building in that. Perhaps they would be able to do it, not just push us off like months and months and months. Something to think about it.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Secondly, I want to thank the people that planned the Santa arrival on the Common. I'm sorry that I wasn't here for that, but I heard very nice things about it. I was out of the state. And again, someone had said something about all the decorations, and I think they did a wonderful job with that, too. I'd like to bring up our museum, the gift store. We have the ornaments, and we have many, many Franklin gifts that are in there that I'd like to invite people that are looking for some gifts to give out, especially to those people that have moved out of Franklin that they're still friends with. It's great to give them some type of an ornament to that so that they can remember our town. And I'm inviting them in to the museum, come in, look around, and certainly to purchase something. Lastly, Mr. Chairman, you had put me on the SCADA committee, regional committee, and I would like to, at this time, invite any of the seniors during the third Thursday of the month when we have our hours at the Senior Center to come in and fill me in with a few things, you know, as far as how the buses are working, how are the people, the times, anything like that. But I'd like to sit and just get a background from them, okay, so that I would be able to help you in the future. And I think that's it, Mr. Chairman. And Bill Gillino was a very dear friend, as with some of them on the council here.
Absolutely.
He was one of the coffee shop guys. Okay, great, 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 great guy. And will be sorely missed. And my husband is very upset still about it, as Tommy and Bob and a few others. But to his family, our deepest sympathy. And that's it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Pellegrini. Councilor Sheridan.
So is the Jamie, is that on National Historic Registry, the schoolhouse?
That is correct.
It is, okay. And they actually painted over the brick with red paint?
Lead paint.
Yeah. That's it.
The whole building is lead paint.
Thank you.
Councilor Frangillo.
Thank you. Two things. One is next Wednesday, the Franklin Freedom Team is working with some high school groups to put together an open mic night in the name of Love Franklin. You know, there's a whole bunch of sort of unfortunate incidents over the past few months, and it was a contentious election season, and out of that came these big displays of love and compassion for neighbors. And this is yet another one of those, and we're inviting people to share their stories, their art, and certainly welcoming the community to take part. So that's next Wednesday at 6. This is the second event that the Black Box has really, really been fantastic to work with and really accommodating to local groups and helping out the community. So they're fantastic assets. So it's 6 o'clock at the Black Box Theater next Wednesday, an open mic night. I believe it's the tiny URL / Love Franklin if you want to sign up and perform yourself. The other thing, as we get to Christmas time, the Think Franklin First gift cards are back, or they never left, but those things they're great. But we had tens of thousands of dollars we've been able to guarantee stay locally in Franklin. If you're thinking of a gift, if you're thinking of a gift card, give them the gift of shopping locally and help out our businesses. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Frangillo. Councilor Hamblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to agree with what Jamie said in his town administrator's comments, that report, that as someone who lives and whose business is on the line, that normally we lose electricity all the time, is so much better. That I really think that meeting that we had with National Grid really did a lot of work. I want to thank Eileen Mason, the Garden Club, the Boys and Girls Hockey Teams, the DPW, and all the other volunteers that helped decorations on the bridge. It was great. We did it in like an hour less time than we've ever done it before. I want to wish my dad a happy 96th birthday, which is today. Happy birthday, Dad. Not that he's probably asleep. I wanted to tell people that I've been asked to participate in the Massachusetts Municipal Association's counselor training, which is on this Saturday. And I'm really excited that I get to represent Franklin on a panel and talk to all new counselors and give them advice. And so I'm really excited to represent Franklin. I wanted you guys all to know that I'm going to be there. And this Saturday is also a Winter's Farmers Market at Fenmore Fruit Farm from 10 to 2, so don't forget. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Handel. Councilor Jones.
Everything's been said, Mr. Chairman. Have a good night.
Impressive.
Hurry up.
Councilor DeLocco.
All right, yeah. That was a shock.
while Glenn's talking, you know.
I get it.
So I was just talking to Council Plegby. I just wanted to let everybody know the museum is going to be open Saturday 10 to 1 and Sunday 1 to 4. So those will be the hours. I also want to send out condolences to the families in Michigan to the high school shooting. It almost seems like it's second nature now because it happened so much. It's very, very sad. So I want to send my thoughts and prayers out that way. You know, obviously Phil will be very missed at Coffee. I loved him dearly. He's a great guy. Outside of that, I think I'm done.
Thank you, Councilor DeLorco. And I'll close very quickly. Everybody, many councilors have spoken about Phil Gelino, who was a very dear friend of many of us. I had coffee with him every morning for the last 10 years. And he will be sadly missed by all his friends at the coffee shops, for sure. So with that, we do have a need this evening to go into executive session to consider the purchase, exchange, lease, or value of real property because of an open meeting may have a detrimental effect on the negotiating position of the public body. Clerk will.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of considering a purchase, exchange, and lease of value of real property because an open meeting may have a detrimental effect on the negotiating position of our public body.
And we will not return.
And the chair has so declared.
And the chair has so declared.
And we will not reconvene in open session.
We will not reconvene.
Second.
Motion in the second. Roll call vote.
That's right.
Come on.
Have a good night.
Good night. See you.
Former Ledger.
Yes.
Vice Chairman.
Yes.
Chairman.
Yes.
Angelo.
Yes.
Library.
Yes.
Hammond.
Yes.
Jones. Yes. DeLorco.
Yes.
Chair.
Yes.
I'm here to enter.
Thank you, one and all.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.